I spent, most of my childhood in Hawaii. And about every other Saturday, my father or mother would say to us, let's go to the city. And we would leave Barber's Point, which is over on one of the sides of the island, and take this long drive. And in my childhood memory, this was, hours. And we would drive into Waikiki, into Honolulu, and we would go to Sears in the big city. And my parents had an account at Sears, and on the way out of Sears, my mom or dad would let us buy a quarter pound of some candy that we wanted at the candy shop. But it was a big trip into the city. I don't know that Honolulu would be considered a big city, but that was all I knew until we moved from there to Jacksonville, Florida, and then I saw kind of a real city. We'd go from the suburbs into the city of Jacksonville every now and then, and I thought, well, okay, this is a city. And then we moved to England. We moved to London. And I went, whoa, now we're into a serious city. And over my lifetime, God has been very good to me that I have been able to go to many, many large cities. I've spent the night in a tiny, tiny hotel room in Tokyo with a bathtub that I had to get on my knees to get in. I couldn't actually sit in it. I had to stay on my knees. It was so tiny. The bed, I had to lay angularly in order to lay out flat on the bed because the room was so tiny, the bed was so tiny. I slept in Beijing, China, which is a city that never sleeps, like Seoul, Korea. It's sensory overload, 24/7, lights, camera, action, people driving down the streets with those bullhorns selling at 2 in the morning. I went to Singapore, and in Singapore, they're in the ladies' restroom. I shouldn't say this on a tape, but I will. In the ladies' restroom, there's big signs, you will be prosecuted if you do not flush the toilet. And I remember sitting there going, how are they going to know? Let's just see. So I got up without flushing the toilet, walked outside, and just stood around kind of rebellious, like, somebody going to attack me? You going to take me off? They didn't, by the way. I've been in, Paris. I've been in Vienna. I've been in Brussels. I've been in Nairobi, Kenya. Major capital, big cities around the world. But no city in my entire life ever impacted me like the city we're going to talk about today. The city our Bible calls the City of David. And we've been kind of moving up towards this topic by looking at the United Kingdom last week. And this week we're going to touch back a little bit into the life of David and a word or two about that, because he's the one that starts the whole thing that you and I call Jerusalem today. In your Bible, turn to 2 Samuel chapter 4. And the parallel passage for this account is in 1 Chronicles. You remember that the historical books, 1 and 2 Samuel, then 1 and 2 Kings, run chronologically. When you get to Chronicles, you feel like you're reading it all over again, remember? Now the reason for that is Chronicles stops, it's no longer chronological, it goes back to the beginning, but the writer of Chronicles, the chronicler, is now only writing about the southern tribes. He's taken his telescope, and he's not looking at everything that's happening in the southern and northern tribes. He's only looking in the southern tribes. And so Chronicles sounds like he's starting over, but he's not. He's just zeroing in on things that had a great deal of importance to do with the southern tribes. And so our story starts in 2 Samuel 2, and then in 1 Chronicles 10. What it is that David has been made king. And the city that he goes to when he is first made king of the southern tribes is Hebron. And I've got a little map here just to keep you honest. There's Hebron. It's southwest of Jerusalem. As you know, when David was being chased around by Saul, he hid in all kinds of places, including along here in the Judean desert. And ultimately, he is made king of the southern tribes. And for 7 years, he reigns as king, but only king of the southern tribes. And the location of his capital is Hebron. It's about 3,300 feet above sea level. It's on something called the Patriarch's Highway, which runs from the north to the south, up and down in Israel, one of the major highways, the other one being along the sea coast. And this one ran from Beersheba in the south to Shechem in the north and runs right through Hebron. Hebron was an important city. Abraham lived there. Most of the patriarchs are buried there. If you remember, I showed you this picture, a slightly different one. This is in Hebron, and this is the place called Machpelah. And Machpelah is where most of the patriarchs were buried. There, most of their shrines and most of their the assumption of their burial is within that major building. Hebron is the place where Caleb, one of the two spies, says, "Hey, Lord, give me this place." When God was passing out areas, he asked for Hebron in Hebron. David moved there after he left the Philistines and set up his capital in this city. And he's here for about 7 years. In 2 Samuel 5 now, it says in verse number 1, "Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and said, 'Behold, we are your bone and your flesh. Previously, when Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel out and in. The Lord said to you, you will shepherd my people Israel. You will be a ruler over Israel.' And so all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with him before the Lord. They anointed David king over Israel." So now he's 33 years old when he became king. He's going to reign a total of 40 years. At Hebron, he reigned for 40 years. He reigned 40 years. At Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all of Israel and Judah. So verse 6 says, "Now the king and his men, he went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites." He could no longer have his capital in the south, in Hebron. It was just too far south. It wasn't strategically located for the whole country. They had a capital in the north, in Gilead, and it was way too far north. And so Jerusalem was perceived to be kind of sort of in the middle. The problem is it wasn't owned by them. The Canaanites, a specific tribe of the Canaanites known as the Jebusites, controlled this little town, this little place. Now, the Jebusites are mentioned in our Bible several different places as Canaanites. When they came in to conquest the land, there was a whole list of Canaanites, people who lived there, indigenous to that land, and the Jebusites are one of them. They also show up in the book of Joshua. It says in your notes, Judges 9 and 10. It's really Joshua 10. There's a warlike period, or warlike people, rather, who lived there. They organized an army against Joshua. They were led by a certain king, and when he came up against the king, he won, but he didn't wipe them all the way out. So what was left was the Jebusites, who gathered themselves into a small little area, and I do mean small, and established a city-state. That city-state is known as Jebu, J-E-B-U, or the Jebusites live there. David conquers that city in our passage in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verses 6 through 9. King and his men went up to Jerusalem, or Jebu, against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land. They said to David, "You shall not come in here, but the blind and the lame shall turn you away," thinking, "David cannot enter here." Nevertheless, David captured the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. And David said on that day, "Whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him reach those lame and the blind who are hated by David's soul through the water tunnel." A little point there on that word in a moment. "Therefore, they say, the blind or the lame shall not come into the house." So David lived in the stronghold, and he called it the city of David. He built all around, from the millow and inward, and David became greater and greater, for the Lord of hosts was with him. It was a strategically located piece of land, not very big, but very strategic. This would be like a little drawing of the cross section of where the city of Jerusalem is. It's right here. This is Mount Moriah. This is the mount that's going to hold the Temple Mount at some point. This is the hill known as Mount Zion, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. And there's a valley on this side, which is known as the Cheese Valley, the Cheeseman's Valley. There are valleys all around. There's a valley down this side, which is the Kidron Valley. There's the Hinnom Valley, which runs in the south and up the southwestern section. This is where this city was. It's located right in this area, right in here, heavily fortified, very difficult to get to. Steep hills on all sides except for the north, and big, thick, imposing walls, massive walls on the north side. What was unique about the city that's going to be known as Jerusalem, is it had a steady and very effective water system. Most cities did not have that. That's why they kept falling, because you could cut off their water and the city would have to fold. Jerusalem had a very unique water system. That's a great study all in itself. But what's fascinating is this word, the water tunnel, in verse number, what is that, 8? What's happened is the people of the city taunted David and his buddies, and they essentially say, hey, even the blind and the lame could ward you guys off. You can't get in here. David went and took a look, apparently, at the water shaft, and he went to his men and said, hey, the only way we're going to get in the city is if we sneak in through the water tunnel system. And the guy who can do it, I'm going to make him general of my army. And Joab took the challenge, according to Chronicles, and snuck in to the city via the water tunnel. There's been a lot of archaeological studies on that. For many, many years, that's how they believe that word to be translated. Most recently, they're arguing that, I don't know if that's what that word means. I put it in a side note there. It may simply mean scaling hooks, that the only way they could get in was by using scaling hooks on the massive walls to the north. I'm not smart enough to know which, but I do know that the water system made the city of David well protected. It was a remarkable system that allowed them to have a level of protection. Well, Joab responded to the challenge, and off he went. And according to 1 Chronicles 11:6, he and the other men actually do, in fact, move into the city of David with David. When they move in, he begins to expand the area of the city, and it's going to become larger and larger and larger and larger with each successive king. The United Kingdom had Saul, David, and then Solomon. And David is going to capture this part of the city and hold it. He's going to add to it by making a palace and doing some things with some fancy gardens. When Solomon shows up, it's going to get expanded even more significantly. And with each successive generation that has occurred, up to and including the time of the 1500s, when I'll talk in a moment about the old city walls were established, and they're the same ones that are there today. So he gets into the city. Once he's in the city, he's there, he's the ruler, he's the king, he's now the king of the United Kingdom, north and south. But what's got to happen now is he needs to get the ark in the city. The ark is not in the city. And the story of transporting the ark is found in 2 Samuel 6 and 1 Chronicles 13 and a little bit in chapter 15. The story goes that the ark had been moved to Shiloh, that was one of our quiz questions, and it had remained there for a very long time. The Philistines had captured it, and it was with them for about 7 months. And then it got returned, first to Beth Shemesh and then to Kirjath Jearima, to a particular man's house. And it stayed there for about 20 years. But David realized, if I'm going to have a major capital city and I'm going to consolidate not only my military might, but my spiritual influence, I got to have the ark with me. And so he proposes to move the ark from that location to the city of David. Well, what happens, great story, I don't have time today to spend a lot of time on it, but they go up and begin to move it, and as the ark is being moved, it shifts on the cart, and a guy by the name of Uzzah, U-Z-Z-A-H, I think, reaches up to steady the ark, just doesn't want it to fall. When he does, there's a heavy consequence. He dies. And when you first read that story, you go, golly, is God a little harsh here? I mean, the ark's about to fall, and the guy's just trying to make sure it doesn't, you know, be improperly handled. The truth of the matter is, it was being improperly handled already. And I put the passages in your notes in Exodus 25 and Numbers 4, where the Bible gives very clear instructions on how that ark was to be handled. They were in disobedience from the get-go. David was just anxious. Hey, let's get everything in order. When I move, I'm always anxious. I hate boxes. I want it done. And I'm in there, you know, thrashing around. If I just take a little time, do it right, half the paintings are crooked, can't find anything, but it's put away. David's kind of the same nature. He's trying to get, you know, consolidated in his city. And so he wants the ark there, but he doesn't pay attention to how it was to be transported. After the death of Uzzah and the major issue, they pause for about 3 months. They let the ark stay put. David becomes very aware of how you transport the ark. And now they go to move it. This time, he only goes 6 steps and stops and offers a burnt offering. And 6 more steps and stops and offers a burnt offering. I didn't look up exactly how far they traveled, but you know, every 6 steps, that's a lot of offerings. He's doing it right this time. And when they actually get to the city of David, what happens? His wife is ticked. Because what's David doing? He's dancing before the Lord. The ark's coming. We're going to have a capital city. It's going to be cool. And he is whoopee-dooing it. And his wife is a little embarrassed that there's such enthusiasm taking place. But the ark gets moved inside the city. According to 1 Chronicles 16, apparently David set up like a tabernacle, and he moved the ark into that tent. The latter part of 2 Samuel then sets out the discussion of his wanting to number the people or have a census. You say, well, what's wrong with numbering the people? The purpose of him numbering the people was to see what his raw materials were, what his resources were. Just how strong a king am I? Let's see what I've got to work with. Rather than to rely on the Lord and his strength. And there's an enormous story to be told there as well. But what I want you to see is the story of the threshing floor. And let's go to 2 Samuel 24, I think, and see where he decides to buy the threshing floor. Do I have the right passage? 1 Chronicles 2. I got too many passages here. Hold on a second. Aruna is his name, I think. Am I in 24? Am I right? Verse 18? Perfect. Thank you. There you go. So Gad came to David on a day and said to him, hey, go up and erect an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Aruna, the Jebusite. A man owned a threshing floor. A threshing floor was simply a place where they would separate the chaff from the wheat. And it would have been located in a place where there was a lot of wind, so they could have the advantage of the wind helping them do their job. So apparently up on Mount Moriah somewhere, this guy owns a threshing floor. And on that threshing floor, David comes, verse 19, he went up according to the word of the Lord. Verse 20, Aruna looked down and saw the king and his servants crossing towards him. He went and bowed his face to the ground. He says, why has my lord the king come to his servant? David said, well, I'm going to buy the threshing floor from you in order to build an altar to the Lord that the plague may be held back from the people. Aruna says, hey, just take it. You don't have to pay for it. And a great application here in verse 24. The king says to Aruna, no, but I will surely buy it from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God, which costs me nothing. There's a great, incredible story there. The point is that he buys that piece of land so that he has a place to put the altar. And then from the latter part of, for the rest of his life, which is not long, he sets up the plans and starts collecting all the materials to actually build the temple. He is not allowed to build the temple, and next week we're going to spend a lot of time on the tabernacle and the temple. Solomon actually builds it, but he does a lot of the collecting of the stuff. So what am I trying to say to you? I'm trying to say to you that there is an overview that starts with David. The city of David starts with David. David's the one that moved in there. David's the one that captured it. David's the one that built his palace. David is the one that sets up a place for the ark. He buys the threshing floor, which turns out to be out on Mount Moriah, which is really where the Temple Mount is today. And everything starts with David taking this little bitty city. I put in your notes just a quick historical overview. Hold on. Just destroyed my microphone. A quick historical overview of the city itself. In about 1000 BC, that's when David came and conquered the city. About 50 years later, Solomon's going to actually build the temple and extend the city walls. You'd find that in 1 Kings 6 and 7. He spends 7 years building the temple and 13 years building his own palace. The first temple is destroyed in about 586 by the Babylonians. You'll find that story in 2 Kings 25. Nehemiah, 70 years later, and others, Ezra and Zerubbabel, will return to Jerusalem from captivity, and they're going to rebuild the walls, and the temple is going to be rebuilt in about 516 BC. We roll forward then till about 40, 41 to 44 BC, when Herod builds what's known by the Israelites as the second temple. It's really the third, first one built by Solomon, second one repaired or built by Zerubbabel, and the third one which is Herod's temple. But in Israel, they refer to that as the second. I'm having a little trouble here with the microphone. It's a little loud, too. Okay, let's see if that works. That temple that Herod built only stood not an enormous length of time, because in 70 AD, the Roman general Titus is going to storm in and destroy the temple. And then from the years of about 1219 to 1538, the walls of the city are going to be destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt. And in 1538, Suleiman the Magnificent, I love that name. You like that? Suleiman. Suleiman the Magnificent is going to build what are still today the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. When you go to Jerusalem, and it's not if, it's when you go to Jerusalem, that's what you'll see is Suleiman's temple or the walls around Jerusalem. Now, before I start showing you diagrams of the city itself, which is what we're going to spend the last part of our time on, I wanted you to look at the notes and just get one more little sense of the topography. Because the whole business about the city of David is the fact that it's built on hills. These hills are significant because the valleys around it are significant. So if we were standing in the south and we were looking north, that little cross-section on page 3 of your notes is the Jerusalem cross-section. From the right to the left of the notes, which would be from the east to the west, you'd start with the Mount, or we know as the Mount of Olives. And when you go to Jerusalem, you'll go up there. You'll end up on that hill, and you'll look down over on the Temple Mount. You'll look down on the Old City. You're going to go into the Garden of Gethsemane that's on that hillside. That Mount of Olives is the easternmost little hill. Between it and the Temple Mount is the Kidron Valley. And the Kidron Valley is so important for lots of reasons. Among them, the night Jesus was betrayed, he leaves the upper room, which is actually over to the west, out on Mount Zion somewhere, and he travels through the old city, gets into the valley of the Kidron, and picks up a vine, and starts in John 15 with his discourse, "I am the vine, you are the branches." He's walking across the Kidron Valley on his way to the Mount of Olives. If you keep going to the west or to your left across that paper, you're going to come to something that says the Omar Mosque, which is just another way of saying the Temple Mount. Today there is a mosque on the Temple Mount. If you look at that little cross-section, you can see some dotted lines. When Herod actually built his temple, we'll call it the Third Temple, even though they don't. When he went to build his temple in 40 or so B.C., it was not a level hill. And so he's a master builder. He's building so many major things throughout Israel during his time period. It's not funny. Masada's his, and lots of stuff in Caesarea and lots of other places. But he realizes this little hill thing that he's got to work with isn't sufficient to build the edifice he wants to build. So he levels the hillside there. And so what you see is the idea that he levels it off, and then the Temple Mount is on it today. Then there's a little valley just to the west of the Temple Mount, and then it begins to go up another little hill where much of the old city is. And in a moment, I'll show you that from a kind of a bird's eye view. And then you go over, still moving left, you see where it says Western City Wall, and then the Hinnom Valley that runs all along the western side and down into the southwestern side. So you get a little bit of an idea of the topography. All right, now, find my clicker, and let's look at some deals here. Jerusalem, let's start with the oldest time period, which should be in yellow, and you can't see it, but on your notes I think it says the time when David conquered the city looked like this. The city that David conquered is just this little part right here. What these are the walls that if you go to Jerusalem today, those are the old city walls that are currently existing. Remember Suleiman Magnificent, 1538, I think. He's building these walls that still exist. What we're trying to show you here is what did David start with? David started with a little bitty city called Jebus, which if you use this marker, is less than what? 100 yards or so wide and maybe 250 yards long. This is not a huge city. Some of you have property that's bigger than that. When he moved in, when David conquered this city, He had a gate down here at the end. He's got walls and towers. He's got another gate in the north. He's got a major spring, the Gihon Spring. He's got a water gate here. And there is people living in here. This was fortified. This was hard to take. Remember, the Kidron Valley's running here, and the Valley of Hinnom is running this way. This was a tough nut to crack. But David did, and that's the size of it at the time of David conquering the city. Then we get to the time period a little bit later. This is the time period of Solomon. Now what does the city of David look like? Well, the same little beginnings is right here. This was the part that was David's. Everybody with me? Am I in anybody's way? Okay, this was what David had to work with. Kind of tiny, about 100 yards wide, 250 yards long. Now, Solomon has added considerably to the west and some stuff to the north. Now, the stuff to the north, there's your Temple Mount. That's where the temple's going to be built. That's where the threshing floor was of Araunah's. And so Solomon has spread the city out considerably. Now, it's superimposed on the current old city. So when you go to Jerusalem and you go in the old city, you're going to enter in on one of the seven open gates today, and you're going to wander around, and eventually you're going to get to the Temple Mount. The Western Wailing Wall is right there. It still exists. That portion is there. The Southern Wall still exists. It's not quite the exact one that you see here, but it's there. I'm sitting right there taking pictures on the Southern Wall. So this is a depiction then of the size of the city of David that Solomon had. We all together? Everybody good? Okay. Keep going here. Now we're to the time of Nehemiah. This is after the exile. They've come back. The city has grown considerably. Again, orient yourself. Here's the part David had to begin with, just a little bit here. Solomon's was expanded a little bit. And now we've got to get some real set walls. Nehemiah's job was to rebuild the walls, to protect the city. We need good walls. And a great study for you is to take the book of Nehemiah and read where he travels the night before when he's doing his little survey work and what actually gets built and how they built it, these walls, to protect the city of David. It's getting bigger, a little different in Nehemiah's time. We're going to get to the period then of Herod. We'll call this, for the lack of a better word, New Testament look. What does the city look like? Remind yourself that this white is the Suleiman walls that are existing today. So at the time of Jesus, his city looked a lot like the one we got now. The walls here in the northwestern section were a little different, and it cut off this section right here. But other than that, you're pretty close. Not exactly, but pretty close to the city you're in right now. When you're at the Temple Mount and you go to the Western Wailing Wall, you're right here along this side here. When you sit in the southern area right here, you're sitting right in that area today. When you come and go out of this city, there are seven major gates around the city. I walked from here straight down this wall, across this wall, over to about right there to the Dung Gate, and I'm going to talk about the gates in a moment, and walked out. I'm in the exact part of the city that was where Jesus was. I'm walking on the same streets. I'm sitting in places he may have sat. When he left Mount Mount Zion, which is right up in this area here, and he walked through the city his last night, ended up coming out through that eastern gate and going up into the Mount of the Mount of Olives, I walk that exact same area. I'm sitting right here on this closed gate on the inside. I'm walking. I'm sitting right here. He would have had to come down this walkway in order to get to where he was going. It is a magnificent experience, especially if you have in your mind this is what the city is like. Now let's go to what the city looks like today. Well, no, I've got a couple of more charts. These are just different ways of seeing the same thing. This was the time period of Hezekiah. Again, a small little strip, or similar to David's time. Solomon has expanded, as you can see. We've got Solomon City up here. We've got the temple, so it's after David, but a small representation. Here's Nehemiah's time. It's starting to look like the current city. You can see the descriptives are pretty much similar. Interesting, the gates are called different things. That drove us crazy. Depending on which slice of history, the gates are called something else. So we get all the gates down, and then somebody will go, the sheep gate. Wait, sheep gate. Oh, yeah, that's up by Stevens. In the New Testament, it's Stevens. It's sheep in Nehemiah's time. That'll drive you crazy, but don't worry about it. Here's the New Testament one, just a slightly different descriptor that I thought might be helpful for you. Once again, the city of David is just this little piece down here. Then it gets expanded. These walls are roughly the walls of there today. Actually, they're not. They cut this direction and go across. But this part is pretty much the same, and the Temple Mount is identical. I'm going to pause a second and ask if you got a question, because sometimes if you go too fast, people don't get to ask a question. Is there anything? Yeah, Carolyn. Herod? He is a Roman patriarch. He's a Roman... He's a local set-up ruler by Rome's rule that's allowed to rule that area. And he is smarter than a whip and a big-time builder. Because he's building. He's building everything. He built Masada. He built a big palace in Caesarea. He had a lot to do with Bethshean. He's a big-time builder. He's into magnificent construction. It was not a spiritual exercise for him. Yes, he did. He did. But it was not a spiritual deal for him. All right. This just happened to be an engraving done in the 17th century. It's just another way to look at exactly the same thing. Orient yourself. There's the Temple Mount. This is the Kidron Valley. The Valley of Hinnom goes wrapping across this way. Mount of Olives over here. Here are the walls of the Temple Mount itself. This is the southern steps, or the way you would come into the temple is from the south. It's all right there. That was an engraving done in the 19th century. I threw a couple more time periods. This is Roman and Byzantine Jerusalem. You're getting the same idea. This one actually calls out Mount Zion, which is right over in this area. Most scholars believe the upper room was here. And Mount Moriah is the Temple Mount area, so those are two mountains you hear a lot about. Let me go to a couple more. This is what it looked like during the Crusades. Again, not a whole lot of difference. A few details are being spelled out for you. I liked this one just because of the way it laid the city out. You're standing, if you will, on the Mount of Olives. Here's the Kidron Valley running in front of the Temple Mount. It's oriented east to west with the Holy of Holies in the furthest part back, which is why the Jews revere that western wall. It's the closest to the Holy of Holies. It's the only part they can get to today, and that's why that's the place where they worship. This would just be a layout of the city. Here, this is a great site, and I wanted to give you the site itself. Pause a moment. Yes, I have it. I know I do. Don't go anywhere. Are you going somewhere? Don't go anywhere. Yes. holylandnetwork.com/temple/model. holylandnetwork.com/temple/model. What I liked about this is it not only gives you this, but you have listed there what each of these sites are. So you can orient yourself by sitting there on that site going, okay, number 18 was Herod's palace right there. We had a knockdown, drag-out argument about what that was when we were in Jerusalem. And by the way, I was right. Anyway, if you take some time on the site, it will orient you to all kinds of locations on that map. Can I do the Jesus on the Last Supper night? Yes. Yeah, okay. Let me take a moment here. See, it's 24, David's tomb, Palace of Caiaphas is 25. So, okay, here's the Palace of Caiaphas. So one of his trials was here. This is Mount Zion area up in this general direction. That would have been where they believe the upper room was. So he would have been in this area. He would have left there and walked probably this direction. probably through the temple grounds, out the eastern gate, onto the Mount of Olives. Returning similarly, now he's got to get back over here to Caiaphas for the trial, and then he's going to end up here for the trial before Pilate right there. There are two sites for the crucifixion. One is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which I think is that one. It's right in this area. And then there's another one outside of the city where they think it might be. Likewise, two locations for possible burial, one in the Holy Sepulchre and one just outside the city gates. Okay, good site. You're going to want to go to that one. All right. Let me keep going here. Here's just another one of the same kind of thing. This is the one I want you to look at for a minute. I wanted you to see this because this is the old city as it was in 1538 or whatever, Gro Suleiman. It's what you would see today. When on our free day, we entered, let's see if my little thing here, we entered the Jaffa Gate right here. We ran around, got hollered at by a lovely Muslim man right there. I went to a Christian bookstore, spent a lot of money, right there. We went into the Tower of David, David's Tower, and that's where we had the big argument about what it was. Remember who won? I did, yes, okay. Then we decided we were going to walk the city walls, so we got up on the wall right here and we started walking. It looks like a lazy little walk. Let me tell you, it is not. Every 100 feet or so, it goes all the way back down, and it comes all the way back up, and then it goes back all the way down. And the steps going up and down are about that wide and totally uneven and about that narrow. Little scary walking on this thing. We finally made it. At one point, there was a spiral one, and I'm freaking out halfway up. Scott Lamming was with us hollering at me, "It's mind over matter." I said, "No, it's not. I can see the ground." Anyway, we finally made it from the Jaffa Gate around. Here's Mount Zion, where the Zion Gate is. That is a cool gate. There's some wonderful websites that you can just go look at all the gates. There are 11 gates around the current city, 7 of which are open and 4 of which are closed. The 7 that are open starting up here, this would be St. Stephen's Gate. This is the Kidron Valley. The Mount of Olives is over here. You can come in and out of that one. This is the Muslim quarter. This is the Christian quarter. Herod's Gate is at the most northern part. The New Gate, which is literally the newest, it came in the 1800s. All the rest of them were in either the 6th century or the 1500s. The Jaffa Gate here, which we went in and out of. The Zion Gate here. The Dung Gate here. And the Golden Gate. The quarters, again, the Muslim quarter, Christian quarter, the Armenian quarter, and the Jewish quarter. Those are very distinct areas. You can tell immediately when you step into the Muslim quarter. There's no doubt in your mind exactly where you are. Not so true between here and here and here. These three kind of look and smell and act pretty similar. But when you step in the Muslim quarter, you know it. The gates, for a moment, just talk about those. The Zion Gate, this is a cool gate. It's not a very wide gate. And in the war of 1967, the 67 war, this one was really attacked by the Jordanians. And if you stand there looking at it today, they got the little holes for the arrows when they would shoot it out during the Middle Ages. And then next to it are all the bullet holes from the various wars that they have incurred. So you're standing there looking at, I don't know, what's that? 1,000 years worth of history, and it's different bullet holes, if you will, on that very same gate. The Dung Gate is called the Dung Gate because that's the refuge. All the city's refuge would be taken out that, and it would have been deposited here in the Valley of Hinnom, or what's another word for that valley? The Valley of Gehenna. Is that not a term you know? It is a euphemism in the New Testament for what? Hades or hell. Because there would have been a raging fire always kept here, because this is the city dump, and everything would come out the Dung Gate. Our bus set right in front of the Dung Gate. This is a great map, and one I hope that you will use to think about the old city. What's fascinating is that city that you go see today is essentially the same city of 1,000 years ago. Same gates. When I said there are 4 gates that are currently closed, one of them is marked Golden Gate here. What's another word for that gate? Anybody know? The Eastern Gate, which I'll show you a picture of in just a second. It's closed. And then there are 3 gates along the southern section of the Temple Mount. A single door, a double door, and a triple door. a triple door known as the Holda Gates, and we'll talk about those when we talk about the Temple Mount. Yes, I'm pretty excited about the City of David. Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how the Muslim quarter is so different?
Yes, except I want to give you quite a chatty time today. It's so different because it is occupied by Muslims. Those are city areas, you know, Santa Ana, Irvine, you know, pretty different. You drive through Irvine, you hit Santa Ana, you kind of know you're in Santa Ana. And I'm not making any fun, I'm just saying there's a difference. In city of Jerusalem, it's exactly the same way. You come out of the Christian quarter and you step into the Muslim quarter, it just has a greater density, it has a different smell. There is an anger associated with it, everybody's screaming and hollering. It's very much a Middle East mindset, which the Israelis are a lot like that too, but not to that extent. The only time on the entire trip, before, after, or during, that I felt uncomfortable is when I was walking the Muslim quarter. And we had come out of where Pilate interrogated Jesus, and we were walking towards the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and as we were walking along, one of the men sitting there, just you know, in an alleyway, had a 9mm loaded in his finger on the trigger, and he was just sitting there bouncing it against his stomach as I was walking by. And there were guns all over Jerusalem, all over Jerusalem. Every time there's a group of school children, they have to have two or three parents with loaded M16s. You would see girls in little pink frilly outfits, pink hats, pink backpacks, with an M16 hanging over their shoulder, loaded with a clip. So it's not like it was the first time I ever saw firearms. It's just a different place. We got into two screaming matches, and both of them happened in the Muslim quarter. So you don't want to mess around. When you go to the Temple Mount, the Western Wailing Wall, then you can go in what they call the Western Tunnel. There's a tunnel that's been excavated along this section right here. And we were going at night. It's when we got our tour, which is cool. It doesn't matter. But when you come out of that tunnel, you come out in the Muslim quarter. And they wouldn't let us do it. They turned us around in the middle of the tunnel, and we had to walk back out and come back out in the Christian part. It's right in here. I'm not exactly sure where where this line is. I'm going to guess it goes like right there. But this western wall, this tunnel, Kath, goes from the Jewish quarter through to the Muslim quarter. It comes out right there at that corner. They can go in the tunnel, but you're not too bright if you go all the way through, especially not at night. You reverse and come back out the other way. All right, this is a picture just of those quarters. And the gates you can see that are listed here, it's indicating one locked gate, which is the Golden Gate or the Eastern Gate. There are actually maybe three more here on the southern steps, but for the sake of argument. I want to spend just a few moments showing you what it looks like today. This would be an aerial view. Let's orient ourselves. Here's the Kidron Valley. This is Mount of Olives. This would be the original City of David down here, down in this area right in here. There's your Valley of Hinnom, or Gehenna. This would be the southern edge of the Temple Mount. These are where the three gates that are closed. The eastern gate is right there and closed. Herod's gate's on the top. I've got pictures of that in a minute. Jaffa's gate's there. Lion's gate is over here, and the dung gate is right about there. So you with me? This would be a picture if I was standing on the Temple Mount. To my left is the Kidron Valley, and this is the Kidron Valley that runs down. The City of David, the lower part that David originally got, would have been right down in here. This is a view now taking it really from the southwest. This is Mount of Zion. This is where they believe the upper room is. When we got in the Jaffa Gate, which is probably right there, we walked the top of that hill all the way around here, came down here. That's the Lion's Gate. And then further down is the Dung Gate. And that's what it looks like today. That's a view. Now I'm standing with my back to the west looking east. Oops, excuse me. This right here is part of the Mount of Olives. Here is the Dome of the Rock. So the actual Temple Mount is running right there. You can see the walls running along. This is something called Robinson's Arch. The Western Wailing Wall would have been right in this direction right here. And let me show you. Okay, let me back up. If you were standing right here in this area, there is a pile of rubble. The pile of rubble is the rubble when Titus destroyed the temple in 70 AD, there is the rubble. I sat right in front, walked by, tapped, touched. You know, I wanted to take home a rock is what I wanted to do. That is when the temple was destroyed, and the Bible talks about not one rock on top of another. You're standing there looking at it. Does anybody want to go to Jerusalem yet? Okay, good. This is a picture from the east. I have my back now to the Mount of Olives. This is the Eastern Gate, or as some call it, the Beautiful Gate. It is the gate that is locked. It's closed. Good old Suleiman and crowd decided that that was the one they wanted to seal off. Now let's think about that for a second. Why, out of all of the gates around the old city, was the Eastern Gate sealed off? What is the gate Jesus is coming through? That one! It's the only place I got myself in trouble is when I was sitting on the other side of this and our guide was giving us that nonsense and I went, oh yeah, right. And my pastor went, shh. So anyway, that's the Eastern Gate. This is Herod's Gate on the north end. This would open into the Muslim quarter. Actually, this in here would be Muslim quarter as well. We did not go through that gate. It's a very famous gate. This is the Jaffa Gate. We walked in through this gate. This one was widened. Some king or queen was coming and they couldn't get their little cart through there, so they widened it at some point. The Christian bookstore is right around the corner, and this is the Tower of David that we were talking about. The knockdown dragout with the Muslim guy was right there. This is a picture of the Dung Gate. Just to orient yourself, here's the Temple Mount. This is the wall coming down. Western Wailing Wall would be right there. This is the Southern Wall. It's got those three gates that are closed, the single gate, the double gate, and the Huldah Gate. And right here is the Dung Gate. So this is where they would have come out. This valley down here would have had the city dump. That's the Southern Wall. They're doing some construction when this was taken, but there are imprints on the wall where the Huldah gates are, where the double gates are, and where the single gate is. You can actually stand in front of them. Another view of that Southern Wall, the single gate is right there, the double gates are right there, and Huldah's are right down here. If you came to the temple, if you were at Jesus' day and you were coming up to the temple, you would walk up the southern steps here. You would take a bath in one of the ritual baths right here, and you would enter probably at the Huldah gate. We were sitting on these steps. Let's see, can you see the imprint here? I can't really tell against that wall. That might be one of them. That's the Southern Wall. This is the Western Wailing Wall, and I've just put two quick pictures in here so you can see what that looks like. This right here is the only section that the Jews have access. Jews today are not allowed on the Temple Mount. So when they want to worship as close as they think they can be to where the temple itself was, which is back here, this portion of this wall, it's a retaining wall is what it really is, that's where they worship. I found a site the other night where you can type in a prayer request and they'll go type it up and go put it in the wall. So I did one. It was kind of interesting. I didn't when I was there because I didn't want to interrupt their worship time. But there's another picture, again, looking a little bit from the side. This is the Western Wailing Wall. It's divided. You can't really tell in this picture, but there's a little fence here. The men are on this side and the women are on this side. There's a little synagogue in there that only the men can go into. And then down that wall further is where that western tunnel is that you can go through. What is my point? So what's the so what this week? Turn in your Bibles to Psalm 48. And I got to give you at least time to argue with your friends for a moment. I'm sorry I went over today. I get to going too much stuff. Otherwise we're going to be in this for 10 years. Psalm 48. So what? City of David, so what? Psalm 48 starts out, great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. Where? In the city of our God, His holy mountain. It's beautiful in elevation. We've looked at that. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion in the far north, the city of the great king. God in her palaces has made himself known as a stronghold. For lo, the kings assembled themselves. They passed by together. They saw it. Then they were amazed. They were terrified. They fled in alarm. Panic seized them there. Anguish as of a woman in childbirth. With the east wind, thou dost break down the ships of Tarshish. As we have seen, so we have seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, Sabaoth, in the city of our God. God will establish her forever. We have thought on thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. As is thy name, O God, so is thy praise to the ends of the earth. Thy right hand is full of righteousness. Let Mount Zion be glad. Let the daughters of Judah rejoice because of thy judgments. Walk around Zion and go around her. Count her towers. Consider her ramparts. Go through her palaces, that you may tell it to the next generation. For such is God, our God forever and ever. He will guide us until death. What's the so what to learn about the city of David? Your job is to consider the ramparts, count the towers, go through the palaces, find out where Mount Zion is, consider the elevations. Why? So you can tell about it to the next generation. All those kids that are in that building and all the ones that you have an influence over and the neighbors and people that talk about the wars in Israel ought to know about this city, because this city speaks of our Savior. It's a pretty big so what. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for this study, this week particularly, to talk about the city of David. A little place that you gave David as a place to have as his capital has grown into a center stage for all of the universe. Father, and in it, someday, you're going to stomp through that eastern gate, and you're going to set up your reign in a way that never has been true before. And Jerusalem will play a part even then. Thank you for letting us study about it. Pray that you'd help us to think about the ruler of that city and how he reigns in our hearts today. We pray it in Christ's name. Amen. Well, thanks for coming. It was no fun without you. Yes, ma'am.